This is Malcolm King here. I'm at King's Home and it's Monday the 2nd of February 2015. I have with me as usual John Thayers, and this morning I'm glad to say we've been joined by Mike Burton. Morning, Mike.
Good morning.
I wonder if we could start right at the beginning, because I think you're not actually Gloucester born and bred, are you?
No, I was born in Maidenhead, a war baby, 1945, and I came to Gloucester when I was about 12. And I went to school in Long Leavens, and I learned rugby though. I'd been playing kicking football about as a young fella, yeah, in the streets. So it wasn't in any way a privileged upbringing.
And there was no rugby in your family?
No, at all.
Yeah. So you started to learn your rugby at Long Leavens School. Did you start as a prop from the start?
Yeah, I had a master called Dennis Williams, who was a rugby winger, and he introduced rugby to Long Leavens Secondary Modern School. Nick Healy, who was the secretary of the North Gloucester Combination for many years, used to come down and try and coach us and introduce us to the game. And of course, that was about 100 yards from the school was a Long Leavens rugby ground where he hoped to recruit some boys for his club, because Long Leavens was a new club then at that time. And I ended up staying a prop, and I remember Mr. Williams said to me, well, I said, because why can't I be number 10? Because I can kick and I can do that. He said, Burton, you will start out as a prop, and I have no doubt looking at you now that you will end up as a prop. And he was right. So I did that, and then I was one of the lads that went to Long Leavens Rugby Club to go and play in the third team, and local combination teams then, most of them had three teams, the Gordon League and you know, Matson had started up by then. They were born out of a club called Churchdown, where there were some good players, and Spartans were the leading team. We progressed to second team, and if you got into the first local, that was a hard, very physical standard of play, and you got no change from local players. They didn't say, well, you're a youngster, they said, you got what the others had. So it was a hard upbringing there.
Yeah. And that was where you first came across Digger Morris, was it?
Yeah, Digger. Digger Morris was he lived in Coney Hill and was attached to Coney Hill, and he came to see me play in a Colts trial. In the Gloucestershire Colts used to play in there, and I never got in the team. You know, I was a bit tall. You know, I wasn't a prop in the first place, so they put me in the second row. But I was only really like 6'1". So when I matured, I was a big prop. But in fact, I was what he called a very short lock. And he used to say, you'd say that a fast flat ball at the front, take it on your shoulder, keep it. And he showed me all these technical things that he'd used all through his career in the 30s. So it was a wonderful thing, really, to have someone like that take an interest in you. And all the things, the rough side of the game, that he said, well, be careful with this. Now, it's like a boxing coach talking to a boxer, and they say, well if he's coming this way, put this hand up, or put your right hand up, or move to the left because he's coming at you with a right, you know he'd say all that to me. And in all the games I played as a Gloucester Colts and all that sort of thing, he was a good, what would be an effective coach nowadays, that's what he would be called. He'd be a specialist forward coach, so I had the advantage of that for my career.
Yeah. Because his own son wasn't a forward, was
no,
he?
No, Chalky was a centre.
Yeah.
And but he played 200 games for Gloucester. We called him Chalky Morris, and he was my pal, actually. He was a distinguished too, but he broke his arm badly in Newport, and it was between wrist and elbow, and both bones went. I don't know what they're called technically, but it set him back a long way, and he I wouldn't say he was never the same again, but it hindered him, you know. But he was a great rugby man. He went back to Coney Hill after Gloucester and played local rugby, which I think takes somebody doing that, you know, because you're a bit of a target. And there was enough rough lads around left in local rugby not to want to be a target.
Can you tell us a bit more about Digger Morris, because he's such a, you know, big name in the history of the club?
Yeah. Well, he played before the war and after the war, and never got an England cap. And he used to tell me the story. He said, the Wheatley brothers at Coventry. Now, I didn't know the Wheatley brothers at all, but Coventry were the toughest team in the land. And whenever I went up to Coventry, I'd see some of their old blokes, and they were a bit condescending. They said, well, you're a good side, lost a lot. You know, you'll do all right, son, if you keep going the road. And I remember thinking, well, we'd do all right. You know, I never ever gave that anyone was better than us. And we used to lay into them with Coventry or not. You know, we let them. We played Gloucester style with them. You know, and it soon emerged with Digger that as soon as he came in the room and he'd come and stand next to me, someone would say, "Well, remember Digger at Sanso? Would you play Sanso?" And they come out with a story about him and how he tackled Prince Obolensky on King's Home. And when I tackled him about it, I said, "Well, what happened then, Digger?" "Oh, no, I don't want to say." I said, "What happened? How did you tackle a winger?" He said, "Let me tell you now, Mick." He said, "He was the fastest winger," he said, "anywhere in." He said, "He played the All Blacks, ran across the field." He said, "I saw him at Twickenham," he said. "And he outpaced them all. He took a diagonal run and scored in the corner." I said, "Really?" He said, "Well, I was standing under the main stand at King's Home," he said, "and he was running with the Dean's Walk behind him towards Worcester Street on the other side of the field, going to score under the clock." And I said, "Well, what happened, Dick?" He said, "I took off," he said, "and he worked out," he said, "that I had half the distance to go that he had," he said. "And he beat four or five people before he straightened up," he said. "And just as he got around the winger," he said, "I reached round him." He said, "Well, what was now an illegal tackle was this?" He said, "I said, well, what was it?" He said, "Well, Mick," he said, "these days you can't do it," he said, "but it was a straight armour." I said, "Where was it?" He said, "Straight under the chin." And of course, he said that he never played again, this chap. And he was a brilliant... When I saw films later of him, he was a very distinguished winger and, of course, a great name. And but those stories abounded everywhere with Digger. And just now and then, he'd be watching me in a Gloucester United game somewhere, and you know, you come off, you've got an eye, you had a whack from somewhere, you know. And he'd walk across with the oranges. That's all we got at half time. We didn't go across. And he'd say, "That was number four." And he'd walk on. He'd tell you, "You done it." You know, he'd say, and then if you didn't deal with it afterwards, he'd say, "Well, I see that boy, he got away with that then, did he?" So you had that Gloucester culture put into you, and it's very much the same as the culture they had in Wales. And that's why I think we enjoyed playing in Wales. It was hard, and you got extras if you were English. You were done a play down there, you know. And of course, Dingo said, "Well, you wait to get down to Neath, and wait to get down to Swansea, Llanelli, and Aberaphon." And they were working class blokes like we were, Aberaf, and they all worked in the steelworks. And of course, the Blue Bloods were Newport and Cardiff, only an hour away. And Digger loved all those, you know, he loved those clashes and telling us about the days. But you had to get it out of him, though. You had to talk to him and try and say, "Well, I was talking to so and so, and he mentioned this." Yeah. And then he'd tell you what happened.
Because Digger remained involved with the team here at Gloucester a long time after he stopped playing, didn't he?
Yeah, Digger was a committee man for a long time, and but he was always a superb character. When he walked in, he had ears like the FA Cup, and he'd walk in and say, "Hello, Digger, how are you?" And some little fellow would come off the shove eighty board, or someone when they're playing dominoes, and a little bloke would stand up with a broken nose and say, "Well, Dig, remember this? You know, he talk about when he tackled him in Swansea in 1936, something like that." You get that sort of thing, and so he stayed with the team. And very often, we'd make major decisions. The culture of Gloucester rugby. We got on a bus, and we used to leave at 8:30 to play Wasps. We'd leave 8:30 in the morning to go and play Cambridge University on a Wednesday. And Digger would be the committee man, you see. And in those days, you had £11, what they called kitty money. That was the team got £11 to look after us. And very often, on the way to Cambridge, we'd stop in Bedford and have lunch. And that was a real treat. The boys used to... I'm not sure we played very well on it, but that was a treat. And then after the game, of course, Digger would say, "Right, I've got the kitty money." And we all knew Digger. And it was a team thing. He'd have a big enamel jug and we all have a few beers. Even midweek, you'd sing a few songs with the others and all that. But it was very different Oxford and Cambridge, because Cambridge took us to the Hawks Club. And Oxford had the St. Vincent's Club. And... of course, when you went there, we had some of our lads, basic lads here, worked on farms and in the wagon works and all these things. And Digger said, "Like, don't worry about the kitty when you get in there." He said, "You can sign." So we said, "What do you mean sign?" He said, "You see, when they take us," they used to sit us down, and they say, "Well, would you like to come to dinner with us?" And they were good, great culture there, because they had the varsity match. We were the last test before the varsity match. And so they sit to take us to dinner, and the prop would sit next to the prop, and they ask what you're doing with your life and so on. But when they bought a drink, they'd go up and put it on an account. So Digger said, well, I'll work this one out. He said, we can have two kitties tonight. And I said, well, how's that then? He said, you watch. So he said, £10, please. Called the hero, and he signed a bit of paper. I said, what did you put? He said, W. Shakespeare. And of course, the president at the time, the very Reverend Canon Mervyn Hughes, and as the year I was captain in 1975, Digger was called in, you see, and Mervyn Hughes said, we've had a letter from Kim, Oxford University. Apparently, our boys were over robust in the match, and we lost this match, and they had Laidlaw, the All Black scrum half, and it was a war, and we lost like 2015, something like that, last game before the last year. And they wrote a letter saying our chaps could have been injured, and it was a very physical encounter, and we have to consider fixes in the future. What's more, one of your chaps had a very large bar bill, and we couldn't find his name on the programme. So we called Digger in, and he was the committee man in charge. And so he said, well, we thought they gave it to us. He did bow to the reverence of Mervyn. Well, Mervyn, he said, they give it to us, and we give it to them, he said. The trouble was, he said, they give us more, and we didn't score any more tries, he said. But afterwards, I don't know what you're talking about. They drunk as much as us. So Mervyn took his glasses off, and he said, the question is, he said, who paid for it? So Digger said, well, they play at home. They were playing at home. We had no game money, so I signed W. Shakespeare for all the... And of course, there was, every time we went out, there was like... of course, he said, I'm the 11 quid now, and we stopped in a pub on the way home. he was a wonderful character, Digger. Yeah. Of course, he could burst into song, you know, with all these old... And they're a bit old-fashioned now, but of course, at 10:30 in the clubhouse, everyone was still there. Visitors used to come to the King's Own to see what the boys were doing now, you know. But it's very different now in a professional era.
Well, I gather, at least on away trips, Mervyn Hughes used to play the piano.
He played, Mervyn could play the piano. Yeah. There was a referee, a very distinguished referee, a Welsh referee, Glyn, I think. He always refereed in a blazer.
Oh, I remember, Glyn. Oh.
Yeah.
Walter.
Yes.
Glyn Walter.
Glyn Walters. And he played with a blazer. He refereed the match. The clubhouse was it was there on this end of the clubhouse. It was
the lion's den.
That was where we used to have the aftermatch thing. And he'd have something to eat afterwards, and then a couple of pints. And he said, "Listen, I'll stay and play if I can get a lift to the station." And so they always used to promise him, you know. And then he'd play, all that stuff, you know. And he'd get them all singing, and his pint would be on the thing spilling. And he'd play these games, and I seem to think like he was one of those that could sing and be all that, and still be respected as a referee. We still didn't take advantage with him, you know. He knew it. And then about 10:30, he got the last train to Cardiff. It was wonderful, if you think about that now, whether you get that now, and whether... I think they're better now in players and referees and all that, because they're professional, but they will never have the time that we had, all the years I played with Gloucester. It was a great social side as well.
Yeah. And Jim Walters was an exceptionally good referee, wasn't he? You know?
Well, yeah, because...
Probably the best of his generation.
I wouldn't have known that at the time. I took an interest in referees later. Referees were like schoolmasters to me. They said, knock on, scrum down. And all the word, when they used to say you're offside, what does that mean? You know, you bloody played. Now and then you get a coach come in. I remember having an England trial and Ron Tennick come in and said, he's a Geordie, but we will work with Don Rutherford. If we'd have moved the ball forward, what would we have done if we'd have turned? I was exhausted. I remember, why are you talking all that for me? I need to... You know, I need to be that much more fitter before I can talk about all that and listen to technical. Mickey Booth, who was a wonderful scrum half at Gloucester for so many years, he knew how the referees worked. Fordy was de facto referee many times. He used to tell me. And you can see the fun we have with those, just mentioning those lads.